Welcome to the Marketing Growth Podcast. I'm your host, Shane Barker. On this episode, Spike Jones, the general manager for the strategic marketing team at Koros, is back again for the episode. For those who missed the last two episodes, here's a quick recap. On our previous episodes, Spike talked about building online communities and leveraging word-of-mouth marketing. Today, though, our conversation is going to focus on multi-channel marketing and the best ways to do it. Let's get it started. So what I want to talk about is the importance of like the multi-channel marketing, right? Because I think that we talk about, you know, these siloed, you know, communities or things that, you know, Twitter or whatever that may be. But I want to talk about multi-channel marketing and like, how do marketers, like, what do they need to do to focus on multi-channel marketing?
Yeah, I think it goes back to a little bit of what we talked about, because, you know, I've got an 81-year-old mother who, she would never WhatsApp a company. She would never go to their website and talk on with a chat bot. She's going to want to pick up the phone and talk to somebody because that's how she's always done it. So that's important. But then, you know, the 16-year-old, they don't want to talk to anybody. So first of all, can I self-serve? So if there's a place that I can go and type in a question and I can get my answer and boom, I'm done when I'm setting something up at home or what if I'm troubleshooting my phone. But then there's the people in between. I want to talk to someone. I want to talk to them right now. And I'm on my phone in the middle of nowhere. So again, you as a brand have to be prepared for all these variables. And like you had talked to just before this, is like those things are changing every day. And there are new channels every single day. And some of them are going to stick around, you know, the TikToks of the world, maybe. Some of them might not. The TikToks of the world, maybe. So, yeah. Because I think about Periscope and I think about Meerkat and I think about all these other ones too that brands will go crazy for. But I just think that importance of being available and ready to serve, whether it's someone saying a great thing about you or someone's having a problem. Because again, turning those problems into, you know, loyal, happy customers, if you take care of their problem. And that's why I make it a point. I was doing it yesterday. I had to return something to Google. And I chatted with someone and they, of course, took care of me and they were great. But I make it a point to answer the surveys afterwards and give my feedback because they want to hear it and be better. But, you know, just having that seamless experience, I think is crucial.
Well, and it, you know, and I think about like Amazon being, you know, and there's a lot of bigger companies too, but they've kind of set that precedent of like, you know, customer service, especially Zappos, I think being the big one of like, hey, like really taking care of the people. And their big thing was, you know, hey, how long can you keep somebody on the phone to talk to them and keep them happy? When before it was like, hey, you got to get people in, get them out. Yeah, it was a different, you know, I got to turn and got to hurry up and get it, you know, got other people calling. And I love that. I love the fact of like, it's like, hey, you know, of course it becomes more difficult brand wise to be able to be able to, you know, look at all these channels and be able to answer all these people. But I will tell you that if for your mom who's looking for a phone number, which your mom sounds like an absolute angel, those companies need to have those phone numbers for your mom. Because I think that's important, because your mom is a very nice person. From what you've told me, she seems like an absolute angel. She adopts. We need a phone number for your mom. So we'll look into that. If your mom has any problems with phone numbers, which I know there's a few companies that, like, if you find a phone number, it's like a gold nugget or something. It's like I don't even know how to handle it. But if your mom needs any help, let me know.
I mean, she's a hugger. So just warning you, she's a hugger.
I was raised by hippies in California. I do nothing but hug. Like I am, don't tease me with a hug. I haven't hugged somebody in so long. I'd probably hold on to your mom for like an hour or something. She'd probably be like, all right, get this hippie guy off me. Cause I don't know what he's doing. I know the COVID thing is a little weird. We maybe just bump elbows or something right now, but I'm going to be looking for a hug if I see your mom, just so you know, just so we'll throw it out there.
Good to know.
Yeah, I'll let you know. Keep you away from my mom is what I'm going to do. So what are some of the key features to successful multi-channel marketing strategies? Because I know we've talked just a little bit about, once again, about, you know, the different channels. But what do you think some of the key features are of like kind of the staples, the pillars to it?
Yeah, I mean, it's the connection points inside the company. I really, you know, it's no longer anything that can be ignored. It should, in my opinion, you know, things like the information that can be pulled from a Koros should be the nervous system of any company now, because it shouldn't be just relegated to care. It shouldn't be just relegated to marketing and PR departments. It should like flow throughout the entire, because R&D can get involved and get new ideas from customers and your community. And I just think all those connection points inside a company, but having a tool that easily connects you, but also breaking down those silos and making sure that these teams are talking to each other and that it's not a contest of who gets the most, you know, who turns and burns the most customers. It is that like, hey man, let's do this together. We are one team for sure. Which in these larger companies that have done it their own way for, you know, decades, it's really hard to break down those silos. But I think those connection points internally are crucial, for sure.
I love that. I think, you know, so it's incredible when you talk about like customer service and so much information that comes through there. Because I had a company that we, long story short, we had about 120 employees at a certain point, and we, customer service was important to us, but we didn't spend as much time as we should have, just to be honest. And all of a sudden it started to become an issue. And I started talking to the customer service reps and I thought, God, they have so much information. They're literally the boots on the ground and they have stuff that says, hey, I've been telling you for 3 months that we should change this. And I'm like, oh my God, like we really should have been listening more. And that was something that, you know, that we learned a lot from that process and said, okay, we got to like really listen, you know, to what we got going on here. You can't be too busy for that. We got to set up meetings and talk to customer service and be able to understand what's going on there, because, you know, they're the ones who get the good calls and the bad calls, and you want to know about both of them. But now when we talk about a social aspect of how the software brings that all into one area, and you can just look at it and figure out, you know, where you need to assign stuff, tasks and people and what they need to do, and be able to see that. So once again, I love that. I love that. It just makes it easy.
Yeah, and having that, and then having that information with people who are talking to you. I mean, taking that community that you own and looking for the trends and what people are talking about, and then going, oh crap, we need to get ahead of this on social because this is bubbling up inside our own community of people that love us and are talking about us, and then vice versa. What are things out there on social that can inform your community as well? Or you can even use social to recruit new people into your community going, hey, did you know there's this thing over here? And it just needs to be this thing that feeds one another, which I think huge opportunity that not a lot of brands are taking advantage of.
No, I love that. I love that. So what are some of the best tools for multi-channel marketing? So anything, what have you used personally and what do you recommend?
I mean, I can't not say Khoros.
I mean, hello. That's what I was waiting for. I was kind of giving you the high sign. Like I had the answer, but I'll let you say it.
No, I appreciate that. You know, and like I said, I came from Spreadfast and we had a very robust marketing tool, but it was for the outbound. It was for listening. You know, the listening tool intelligence is really cool, which I love. But it was that part of it. And then whenever we were acquired by Vista and therefore Lithium, you know, they brought the care and they brought the community to the party too. So it just was a perfect, and when I first heard the announcement, which I found out like 12 minutes before the rest of the company found out, the call was like, hey, this is happening in 12 minutes. It's like, okay, process quickly, what's going to happen? At first it's like, okay, that's kind of interesting. But then whenever we really started to integrate the platforms, it was like, okay, this is a no-brainer. This is an all-in-one, you know, one stop. And I know lots, you know, companies talk about their tech stacks, and they are pulling in these guys over here and this guy over here. And I get it because they serve different purposes, but to have it all in one place, all at your fingertips, I think is really powerful.
Yeah, that's awesome. That's awesome. So what brands do you think are doing multi-channel marketing effectively? Like when you look at that, because I know you guys have obviously a lot of brands that use the software, but is there any brands that you can think that you're like, God, they've been doing a great job?
Yeah. And I think it goes back to the people I was not bashing before, but in my Fleischmann days. But I really do think some of the big telcos are doing a good job. I think Verizon, you know, I know they're one of the big boys and people have different opinions about them, but I think they're one of the ones that are on the forefront, because you think about having to shift from these huge call centers to start to think about, you know what, we really could implement bots to deflect a lot of these calls. We really could get a robust community so people could serve. And so I think Verizon, you know, they're really staying ahead of the trends, or at least staying on trend when it comes to incorporating new ways to get in contact with them and really trying to serve their customers instead of it being that waiting line where you're on hold forever and you get transferred to department to department. It's really meeting those customers where they are when they want to be met.
I love that. That's kind of your guys' tagline, huh? I love that, you guys, because that makes total sense. Like when you said that a few times, and it's like where people are having the conversation and you're just like, you're there, you know, you're like a part of it. Which is like, it's basic in the way that you're saying it, but it's like so important.
Absolutely. Yeah, like, it's no longer like, we'll be over here if you need us. It's like, you hear your name, you go, hey, what do you need? What do you need? You can need something? Can we help you with something?
Yeah.
And it's totally non-creepy way, of course.
Yeah. We don't want to be creepy because that like involves cops and restraining orders. And not that I know anything about that. I'm just saying I've heard from my friends or whatever, but anyway, so we're all good now. I've been married for 15 years. And so we have nothing to worry about. So we're good. No more court cases. But so what are some of the future trends you see in regards to, you know, into multi-channel like marketing and like for marketers, like what do you see? Cause then obviously you guys get all the data and you get to see all the fun stuff and you guys see the trends probably went before a lot of other people. So what would you say, what are some of the trends that you think are going to be happening here in the future?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, when it comes to social, we look at it as, you know, phase one of social was it was a marketing vehicle, and marketers were like, ah, cool, another way to blast out my stuff. And so in the early days, and you were there, you know, that's what they used it for. And then it really became, and then, so that was the one to many world. And then it really became for the brands that were kind of on the leading edge, it became care. It became more of the one-to-one, DM me because you got a problem, which is great. And we are seeing now that when companies have their marketing stuff together and they've got their care stuff together, the next phase for them is what we call brand love. And it's really using those great experiences that you, when you solve a problem, to turn that into a loyal customer, and then taking those loyal customers like my Chevy guy and amplifying who they are and what they do and make them feel important. Because we know the number one reason why a person shares a piece of branded content is because it makes them look good to their friends. Right. So give people pieces of content that make them look awesome to their friends and have those interactions that people go, Target talked to me today on Twitter. This is super cool. So we're calling that phase three. And so from a social aspect, I really think it's that. That's a huge trend that we're starting to see. Not a huge trend. It's a trend we're starting to see. But the customer, again, has to have their marketing and care stuff together. And then on the flip side of it, it really is this shift away from call centers and people realizing that this is not efficient as it could be. I need technology. Sure, there still needs to be people that answer the phone. Absolutely. But does it need to be as big and robust as it used to be? And can we use artificial intelligence to answer some of these basic questions for our customers and have that artificial intelligence learn, which that's one of the most exciting parts of the job, is to see this AI that teaches itself, not in a Skynet kind of way, but in a really cool customer service kind of way.
Yeah, like Watson or IBM or something, where it's like this continue, it starts to learn over time and evolve and become more effective. I think, I mean, to me, that's like, when you think about that kind of stuff, it's kind of blows you away. It's like, you actually something that gets smarter and smarter over time, which was kind of supposed to be, I mean, I was supposed to get smarter and smarter over time. I don't know what happened. I mean, I'm not exactly Watson, but anyways, I know it's a whole nother conversation, but I love that. I love the AI side of things. I think it's, you know, I think it scares some people, but for me, it's intriguing on how it can make things more efficient and be smarter about the way that you do things, which is pretty, pretty crazy. For the future in marketing is going to be fun for sure.
Absolutely.
It's been a great conversation so far, Spike. Before we move on to more fun stuff, I wanted to have a word with our listeners. If you need help managing your online campaigns, my team can help. We offer services such as online PR, content marketing, SEO, influencer marketing, and more. You can check out my website at shanebarker.com. That's shanebarker.com for more information on our services. Now back to the episode with Spike. So cool. Well, this was Spike. We're at the end of this thing here, which is, and I call this the fun section. This is the fun section. Not that we didn't have fun before this. I mean, obviously this is an absolute party. I mean, you and I, you put your suit on. People can't see this. You got all suited up and I put on a dress shirt. I even did my hair. You're looking dapper. Nobody would know that on the podcast, but you were super excited about today's interview. Tell us a little bit, because you had actually touched on a little bit about the book that you had, I think you'd co-written it. It was Brains on Fire. Tell us a little bit about that. Like, cause that was, you wrote that probably 10 years ago, but I've actually read the book. It's actually still relevant today. Give us a little background on that.
Oh, well, thanks for reading the book. I appreciate it. Yeah, it was from the company Brains on Fire, what to call it. Wiley and Sons approached us because we had a blog. I wrote a blog for years and I had to convince the owners of the company to do a blog at the time because they were like, oh, it's just a fad. I'm like, no, this is going to stick around. And if you let me do it, I promise I'll populate it 5 days a week. So I did for years. And Wiley approached us and said, would you like to write a book kind of based on the insights that you have? And we pitched names to them and they're like, no, we want to call it the name of your company, Brains on Fire. That's a random story. Basically, it was taking a look at any successful, and we called them word of mouth movements, because really, you know, campaigns have a beginning and an end, but movements start and they go on as long as the people are involved. So we really, then that's kind of how we branded ourselves, as we created these word of mouth movements. So we broke down 3, 4, 5 of our most successful word of mouth movements into 10 steps of how we did them and basically wrote about them. But we also wrote about how, when we failed, like when we had a successful, one of the first successful movements we had, we took it up and tried to drop it into another company and it fell on its face because you can't have the same exact elements. But there were 10 truths that we learned through those things and we broke them down. And in each chapter, it is like, this is the truth. And then this is how it played out in each of these scenarios. So I'm proud of it because it was based on real stuff. It wasn't philosophy. It wasn't, you would be cool if you do this. It was, we've done this stuff here's what worked, here's what did not work. So again, I wrote it. I only know how to write. I wrote the whole thing. And the inputs from the other authors was they did a lot of research. And of course, we created those movements together. A lot of smart people in that company. Very conversational writers. It sounded like a business book whenever you wrote it. Hopefully it was more like, oh, let's just sit down and talk. But I'm still, you know, like you said, it's been 10 years, which is hard to believe, but still pretty proud of that book.
Yeah, for sure. For sure. Well, it flowed right. I mean, it didn't. The thing is, I like books that don't feel, because it's hard for me to read. What I mean by that is, like, I enjoy reading, but if it doesn't flow well for me, then I get ADHD and then I'm looking at other things and doing this. So I like a book that, once again, that flowed really well for me. And once again, I love the word of mouth thing, right? Because it's been around for so long, and how it's evolved has been pretty interesting to kind of see that. So what are some of your favorite books of all time? Like, what are some of the books that you, are there any books you read like once a year? Or there's a book that you're like, oh my God, I love this book. Give us some feedback here.
So when it comes to the business world, I don't really keep up with business books as much as I used to. I still am a big fan of Chip and Dan Heath. I mean, but, you know, they wrote Switch and so many other great books. But the one that really I always hearken back to that set me on my path and how really set Brains on Fire on its path was good old Seth Godin's Purple Cow. And it is a little short book, which I love, but it is one that I go to again and again and again. And the concept is just so simple about when you're driving down the road and you see all these cows, like the purple cow sticks out. It's because there's only one of them. And here's what makes companies unique. It is those little things. And because it forces me to think about great experiences that I've had with maybe obscure brands. Like, I don't know, do you remember CD Baby? Do you remember that brand?
I do, actually. Yeah.
A little indie website, like the interface was crap, but you could always but one of the things I'll never forget is I ordered a CD from there forever ago, and with it came this letter. I got an email confirmation, and the email confirmation was, Spike, thank you so much for buying this. We put on our white gloves and we, you know, went through and we put this in a magical golden box, and the entire staff waved goodbye to the airplane. Like, this little magical email. And I was like, that is so, I'll never forget that. And it was just a moment that could go, hey, your CD's on its way. Thanks. It was this moment that they took to go, no, you know what? We're going to make this remarkable. And so, absolutely. And it flowed into everything that we did at Brains on Fire when you created those movements. And so I'll never forget it. But Purple Cow is definitely, I will, because I get asked this question by new people who started the company who might be right out of college. And I'll give them a copy. I'll send them one because it's an impactful book.
I love that. And CD Baby, let me explain that to my audience. So CDs were these things that we had back in the day. You'd put them in the machine. They were kind of like a fax, but different. Anyways, you just have to Google it. It's kind of a thing, the whole CD. But CD Baby, I remember their interface. It was absolutely, it kind of reminded me of Craigslist. Like, they just never, they didn't, they're like, we're just going to keep it the way that it is. We're never going to change it, because why would we? You know, this is it. But I don't think I ever bought anything from them, but I heard good things. That's funny that there was an email that made that kind of impression. It's kind of cool when those kind of things happen, because obviously they cared, right? They put in the time and the effort, it made an impact. So, all right. So I'm interested. I love this question. This is one of my favorite questions of the, if you could have dinner with any three people, dead or alive, who would it be? Who would be your three favorites?
Man, you know, whenever I get asked this question, it's always a different answer, but because there's just so many ways you can come at it. But I think people who've been on my mind as of late that I think would be just really interesting and is first, I think Anthony Bourdain would be a good one. Such an interesting life. And it just seems like, because we've all seen him have meals with people all the time. So I just would love to sit down and just have fun and have a good meal with him as well. To make us laugh, Larry David. Big Larry David fan. He's such a quirky effer. Like, I just would like to see, like, crawl around in his brain for a while and see what makes him tick. That would be a lot of fun. And then I think my third one would be Khalil Gibran. And this is a dude, he wrote a book called The Prophet. It has never been out of circulation. He wrote it, I think, in the 1920s. He's a Lebanese immigrant. He was born in the 1880s, I think. And this guy was a writer and a graphic designer and a poet and a philosopher, even though he hated to be called a philosopher. But his life, it was just so interesting. And the way he approached things and how he experimented with words and different writing styles, it's really, really fascinating. So that's an obscure one. If you've never read The Prophet, it's a great little book.
A poetry. I'm going to go check. I'm going to go check that out. I've never heard of that. I always, that's why I ask these kind of questions, because I love, you know, people saying something, or, you know, somebody that I had no idea who they were. And I'm like, wait a second. So I'm going to, the prophet, huh? I'll have to go check that out. And Anthony, man, I just, you know, I wish that guy was still around. I remember watching, because my wife would watch the food shows and all that stuff, and we would watch, and it's like, man, he just nothing but good food and hanging out and drinking and just having a good time. It felt like he had the life, you know. Now it always looks like that on TV and social and stuff, but I was like, man, it just, like, how do I do more of that? Like, you're just going to exotic places and learning the culture and having amazing food and meeting amazing people, you know, having drinks that was always included and whatever else he included with those drinks, who knows? But the idea is he was having fun and always looked like he was having a good time. So yeah, shout out to Anthony.
For sure. For me, he was, on one hand, he seemed like a very simple man and simple life. But then also when you start listening to him, like, you just realize there's layers and layers and layers.
For sure. Yeah. He was like an onion, for sure. Yeah. You would think that you didn't really realize that until, I think probably I saw some interviews with him that you're like, wow, this guy's a lot deeper than what it was. Right. And there was obviously, that was some of the things I think that brought him to what happened. But sure. Anyways, but yeah, he's still, every year, I know there's a lot of people that talk about it on social, and every time I say, like, oh, man, I wish that guy was still around. He was just such a fun to watch. Always looking like, so I was like, I want to be more like him when I get older. How do I do that? How do I travel around and do that? Spike, I know this is going to be fun, man. I had to brace myself today. Like I said, I put on this dress shirt and I was like, you know what? I know he's going to have a tie on. I know he's going to be looking a lot better than I am, but I don't care. I'm going to still do the interview. It just doesn't matter to me anymore. Doesn't matter. So if anybody needed to get in contact with you, or how do we go about doing that?
Email is sjones@corals.com. You can find me on Twitter at Spike Jones, and you can find me on Instagram at Spike. But, you know, when Instagram came along, I was like, you know what? This might be something. I'm going to go ahead and grab this username. Didn't use it for years and years and years. And then, yeah, just started. Well, I started posting years ago. I got hacked once and everything got deleted, but then, you know, it's good to know people at Facebook and Instagram so you can get that stuff back too.
Yeah, that's, which is unheard of. I tell you, I did, when I saw that you had Spike, and I was like, how did he get that? Like, there's going to be something. He must have hacked something, or he knows somebody somewhere. Like, that just doesn't happen. Like, I remember I got this is a long story, but I got, I tried to get Shane Barker at Twitter, and there was a guy that had it, and he just wasn't doing anything with it. It was driving me nuts. So I had to do an underscore. And that's like been like ever since, my whole life. I've like, God damn you underscore. Like, that underscore always just, that underscore defines me. It's the fact that this guy out of like Montana that's tweeted like three times, and I've sent out like 30,000 tweets with my underscore. I'll get it one day. I'm going to talk to somebody. Well, as soon as he passes, I know that he's sick right now. Just kidding. I haven't really been stalking him, but it is something. It has bothered me. But when I say you had Spike, I was like, Dad, you must have been like the second person to get on Instagram. So congrats on that. Congrats that you have that.
Appreciate that.
All right, Spike, it's been a pleasure, man. I know this is going to be fun. Thank you so much for taking the time today. And once again, have an awesome rest of your day. And like I said, we'll talk soon.
Absolutely. It's been an absolute pleasure. Thank you so much for the conversation. I've very much enjoyed it.
Okay, folks, thanks for tuning into the Marketing Growth Podcast, and I hope you've learned a lot from our conversation today with Spike Jones. I'll be back with another episode next week, so stay tuned.